We should be live. It is the 19th of December, 2024, and another show for you guys this evening. Our big stories from last week seem to continue to be the big stories again. The war on freedom by the Jews perpetuates, so we'll be talking about that. With the new laws that they're proposing to bring it into Victoria, because there was a synagogue fire that was allegedly, I think a Jew did it, but they haven't actually determined who did it. But that's good enough reason, even though they haven't determined who did it or why, to take away freedoms to politically demonstrate peacefully. Like, what's the connection? So we'll discuss that. We'll also discuss the development of the Parminder Gate, or Parminder Gate, as it's been called on Twitter, where One Nation have been running this Indian candidate, and it's caused. I mean, the story. There's so many new elements to the story. I wrote an opinion piece on it a few days ago for the Noticer, and there's even more elements of the story coming through now. So we're going to talk about that. Also, there's been another shooting in America that's kind of gay and weird, but instead of I guess it's at least a different shooting than last week, but this teenage girl, trying to be edgy, doing some dumb school shooting. The alleged manifesto that was her manifesto was, really like incoherent and weak. So we'll be discussing that and some other things. Thomas Sewell will be joining us soon as well, so we'll get his thoughts as well this evening on all of this. But how you doing this evening, Blair?
I'm all right. I just worked out how to share this on my X account because on my phone, I can't see a lot of your tweets. There's some sort of, ban or layer of censorship on the posts that you make. And I still haven't actually worked out how to get around that on my phone, but I think I can see them on my laptop. So I was able to share. For the first time, I'm sharing our show on X, and I'm glad I figured out how to do it. Other than that, yeah, I'm fine, man. Everything's good. Been training pretty hard, which has resulted in me feeling a bit more stressed. Well, not feeling stressed, but my body is showing signs of stress. Like I have a mini little ulcer on my tongue, probably from training too much. But I'm getting more time to train because it's coming up to the end of the year and clients are starting to drop off. People are getting ready for Christmas and I have more free time. I'm glad for that, It gives me the time, the chance to get inside my own head and process my own thoughts, which I really enjoy doing. Actually, I feel like if I don't get that time, I get very angry. But yeah, a little bit tired, but I'll stay with it. Like you said, the news seems to be just, further developments on what we talked about last week, but still interesting. But
Yeah,
just
they
a
are interesting
segue.
stories.
Yeah, just a little segue before we get stuck into it, before Tom arrives. I was just scrolling X, as one does, and I saw a picture of what I thought was a young me. I'm like, whoa, that looks like me when I was like 16 and in construction. But then on closer inspection, it wasn't me. But it was posted by Victoria Police. They're looking for a guy
Oh
who
yeah,
apparently.
respectable, what's up?
Yeah, see if you can bring it up because they're looking for a
Yeah, I've
guy
got it
who,
here.
in Balaclava, which is a suburb down in Victoria, Australia, which is heavily populated by Jews, I think. It's known for being
Police
a
are
Jewish suburb.
investigating a report of racially motivated offensive behavior.
I don't know what that means exactly,
Here he is.
but doesn't that looks exactly like me when I was a teenager. Look at that. Just looks like skinny younger me coming home from work.
Pre-steroid Blair.
Oh, come on,
Look
man. Come
at
on. Probably true. Anyway, scroll
that.
down
Yeah,
because
people
police had
should
to
get him on
turn
the
the
roll.
comments off. Police
Yeah,
had to
but
turn
I got
comments
my
off.
top comment in. He didn't do nothing. So
Yeah, I know, I saw that. And I think it's one of the best. But keep
all
scrolling
the
down
boys
until you
are in
start
there.
getting memes. I mean, everybody, this is a serious story, right? Offensive behavior, racially motivated,
Report
offensive conduct.
the
We should read the comments for more information.
What is the charge? Being a slur, a succulent ethnic slur? Being white in public is now illegal? Where's his
There's
energy for
got
the
to be at
racially
least.
motivated violence against whites by Sudanese immigrants at train stations? Comfy friend with the big comment there, yeah. What the
Well,
fuck is
there's got to be
offensive
at least a
behavior?
few
Miss
cops.
White is right.
There's got to be at
Joe
least a few
Dirt. Even
cops
if I knew him, I
after.
wouldn't report it to you fucking pigs. It's all the boys in there and the girls.
Yeah.
look at this guy. He's just like photoshopped a Jew's face. Arrest all people who look like this. People are just going hard in the comments.
That's what community pressure looks like. That's what a legitimate organic community response to a police story looks like. If you give everyone free speech, this is what happens. That's why free speech is a great thing. That's why we support free speech, because that gives us the ability to speak, and this is what happens. A lot more people out there have more based opinions than you realize, and you know, threads like that demonstrate that reality.
Quite funny. Well, I hope they don't catch him, but if you do have any information on this individual, please forward it to the NSN contact bot. We'd love to recruit him. We're pretty racially motivated ourselves. Anyway, that is a funny story. I mean, hopefully he doesn't get in trouble. I don't know what happened there, but it's obviously a nothing burger. Offensive behavior is the most ridiculous crime. Like, how is that even a crime? We should have a right to behave offensively in this country. I mean, what the hell is the... Like, we're Australians. You know, this is ridiculous. But I digress. There's, as I said, there's a few big stories to talk about. The first thing I want to talk about, Blair, you were shutting me down last week because I was talking about how that Luigi, I can't remember his last name, some Italian shit, that Luigi guy in America who shot the CEO of some health insurance company or whatever. I was saying that, you know, it was kind of gay and boring. You know, his terrorism was boring. It wasn't interesting. You know, this is a far cry from the interesting terrorists of yesteryear, you know, like Ted Kaczynski or whatever. I'm not going to rattle off all the names. And you were trying to shut me down. You know, you were saying...
That's a pretty rough way to put it. I wasn't trying to shut you down. I was just...
You were trying to cancel me. I wasn't being politically correct enough. The woke cops are coming at me.
We need to be smart. If you're going to start talking about sensitive topics, we need to skim across the surface of them without getting too analytical, you know, sharing opinions. You know, that's just the way things are. I don't want to be indirectly supporting terrorism.
But I was saying the opposite. I was saying that this particular piece of terrorism is gay, and it's like terrorism has lost its way. And then I think that was an accurate call, because then an even gayer form of terrorism happened in America this week, or a few days ago, where this 15-year-old girl, who's a little edgelord retard, decided to shoot up her school and then kill herself for literally no reason. I read the manifesto that was leaked.
What is this? I haven't seen any information on this, I don't think. Have you got something to bring up on the screen?
I can find something in a sec. But right. Basically, she's a 15-year-old girl. Can't remember her name. But the manifesto was just like deranged rambling about how like her parents, she doesn't like her parents and like, you know, life sucks. And it was like this like nihilistic yap. It had no like discernible point. Like there's no political message. There was no real existential message. Like it was just, you know, it just seemed like she was like moody, like some emo moody chick. And then she's gone along and like done something crazy like that. It's like, you know, terrorism has just become gay now. I said something on Twitter, like terrorism is like where rock music was in the late 2000s. You know, it's just gay and lame at this point. And the only people that take it seriously are like retarded teenage girls. She was obviously trying to do some kind of like Columbine shooting, you know, homage, but it wasn't even, at least the Columbine guys had cool clothes and stuff. They at least like they were retarded as well, but at least they had like an aesthetic. You know, they had like an energy, you know. So the point that I'm making actually is, you know, ASIO should be happy about my message. My message is that terrorism has become gay. Don't try terrorism because you're going to come off like a fag. Like everyone that's trying to do this stuff lately, like that set himself on fire for Palestine. I can't remember his name. That was lame as well. You know, all these like, it's all become very like played out at this point. It's been done. Plenty of others have got the headlines and they've done it cooler than you and more interestingly than you. And it's old at this point, you know, it's like trying to make a grunge band. It's like the 90s was like 3 decades ago. What are you doing? Like it's over. No one's going to care. You get what I'm saying?
I suppose so. I don't have a lot of thoughts on the matter. I just think shooting or killing random people because you're mad about something in order to make a statement and have an impact on society or to attempt to have an impact on society. I just think it's deranged bullshit, man. I always have. I don't really find any sort of terrorism interesting. I'm not one of those people who's like, let's study these psychos and work out the, you know, the way the psychology of a pervert or a, you know, a murderer or a pedophile. That's what modern psychology does. It's like, let's, you know, deconstruct and understand them. No, you don't have to understand these people. You just execute them. They're defective and you just execute them. You know, that's, you know, I have to say that. I can't say anything even remotely in support of politically motivated violence. Very sensitive times in Australia.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm criticizing politically motivated violence. I'm saying that it's every time someone seems to engage in it, it just keeps getting gayer and gayer. Like, I mean, terrorism is either gay or it's totally fake, like this fake Jew firebombing on the synagogue. I mean, you know, you had 9/11 where the Jews blew up, you know, the Twin Towers and then like blamed it on, apparently had to invade Iraq for some reason because the, you know, an Israeli think tank commissioned by Benjamin Netanyahu in the 1990s transplanted itself into America, called itself the Project of the New American Century. And then Richard Perle, this dual citizen, ends up saying, hey, this idea that we had in this Israeli think tank about invading Iraq in the mid 90s, we're going to like dress it up in like neocon language and then try and sell it to conservatives in America in 1999. And then he gets put into the Bush administration. And then the Jews do the fake 9/11. And then it's even the official story is that there were Saudi Arabian terrorists. What the hell does that have to do with Iraq? But that really pissed everybody off. And then boom, da da boom. Apparently Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction and he's friends with Al-Qaeda or something. And then the CIA literally said to the Bush administration, well, that's bullshit. Like our intelligence doesn't say that. And so they created a whole subdimension of the government called the Office of Special Plans, run by the Zionists and Jews in the Bush administration to create all this fake intelligence as a pretext to invade Iraq. We invade Iraq. Oh, there's no weapons of mass destruction, but Israel's plan from the mid-90s to invade Iraq gets achieved. So this is the Jewish playbook. Fake terrorism is a Jewish playbook. And you know, that basically was used as a pretext to destroy, you know, to basically bring in all these new laws that facilitated mass surveillance and anti-terrorism legislation that is now being used against nationalists and all the rest of it. And they're doing it again, the Jewish playbook of fake terrorism, where, you know, they burn their own synagogue. And then the solution to your synagogue getting firebombed isn't task force against political firebombings or religious firebombings or something. That would actually solve the apparent issue that was created, but we haven't even figured out who did the firebombing. I don't think we ever will, because I think the counterterrorism police know that the Jews did it to themselves. But apparently the solution is to ban masks at public demonstrations and to prevent people from doing rallies near religious, within 150 meters of religious buildings, which, by the way, there's churches all through the center of Melbourne. So that means that like major landmarks in Melbourne, like I think Flinders Street Station, where we've done rallies before over the years. I remember watching a video of you, Blair, from, I think Tom might've been there too. This is like from like 8 or 9 years ago, you guys did a rally at Flinders Street Station. And obviously we did the mass deportations now rally earlier this year, you know, at Flinders Street Station or partially at Flinders Street Station. So, you know, that's a very significant landmark in Melbourne, right across from Fed Square, but it's within 150 meters of a church. So now you can't do a demonstration there. Oh, well, not now, but when these laws inevitably get passed, what the hell does that have to do with firebombing? Like firebombing is already illegal. Why can't you just prosecute the firebombing? But what this shows is that what Jews are afraid of isn't actually terrorism. What they're afraid of is criticism. You know, every time Jews do a fake terror attack, all the laws that they get passed and the agenda that gets passed has nothing to do with the original thing. It's just an excuse to violate your rights and to direct the government into doing things that the Jews already wanted to do prior to the alleged act. And we've seen now as well.
Why do you think Jews are afraid of criticism?
Well, they're afraid of criticism because they've committed crimes on like a societal scale. They've subverted this country. They have incredible power, way more power than they should have as 0.4% of the population. So many, and also they use that power to siphon off resources and support for Israel, even though Israel's got nothing to do with Australia. Why, you know, why does Peter Dutton do press conferences with the Australian flag and the Israeli flag behind him? Why is Israel even an issue in Australian politics? It's on the other side of the fucking world. What relevance does it have to us? Nothing. The relevance that it has is that Jews control Australia. Jews control Australian politics. Like what the Jacinta Allen, the Premier of Victoria, said in her press conference is, this is what we're going to do for the Jews, and then outlined a whole series of laws that they're going to pass. She literally said, this is for the Jews. Like, that's crazy. There's 0.4% of the population. Why do they just have the major parties? Because the Liberals love the Jews even more than Labour. Why are they falling over themselves to prove how much they love the Jews and prostrate themselves before them and say, oh, we're doing as much as we can to pass as many laws to make it impossible for the people you don't like, which isn't just us. They're coming after us to try to destroy our ability to protest, but they're also going after the pro-Palestine left. They want to shut down any kind of, you know, they want to basically shut down any kind of political activity that Jews don't like. And this is somehow relevant because if people do political activity that's critical of Jews, someone might want to go and firebomb a synagogue or something. And so, like, you can't just have a law against firebombing. You have to completely control how people think and how people act. So just ban all criticism of Jews from society entirely. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's tyrannical. It's but nevertheless, what the government is showing is that to them, Jewish feelings matter more than our freedoms. Or any kind of modicum of fairness. I mean, there was a church in Geelong that was burnt down a few weeks ago. Where's the anti-Christian task force? There was a priest stabbed in Sydney earlier this year in the middle of a church service by a Muslim terrorist. You know, like, it's only the Jews that get these special protections.
Can I just interject for a moment to draw attention to Tom Sewell's new mustache? Looking great, mate. Kind of reminiscent of Mosley or something. What made you go with the stash?
Hello, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
This is the first stream that I've done for the Joel. Sorry, let me just mute all my shit.
This is the you've been missing in action for a few weeks, man. What's happening?
Well, I needed some time to process, you know, digest. There's a lot going on in the world, obviously. But yeah, I got a new cam and a new mic, so hopefully I'm coming through nice and clear. The Mo was just Movember for last month, and I decided to keep it because my dad had a Mo when I was born. So I figured I'll keep it until the next one's born. I got a baby on the way, so could be anytime soon. I won't say exactly how soon, but very soon.
Well, congratulations, man. It's exciting stuff. Lots of boys having babies in the community throughout Australia, I've noticed. Lots of new families being started. Some guys quite young too. They're getting started young. They're like 22 years old, punching out kids already, which is awesome to see. I think it's better off having kids when you're younger. They're bound to be healthier when you're younger. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I do regret in some ways not starting younger. And the main reason for that is, yeah, it's the first 6 months especially is really hard. And it takes up a lot of your time. It all works out, I think, anyway. At the end of the day, you either have kids early and then you develop that part of your life while you're young. And then when you're older, you can develop deeper parts of your understanding, philosophy. You have more time to yourself. I mean, I know a lot of boomers and a lot of that generation, once their kids grow up, they kind of just go on holiday. But I think what you're meant to do is leave some sort of intellectual legacy. You're meant to do something worthwhile. A lot of people just, it's sort of career or holiday. They don't really think about anything more than that. But the other way of doing it, rather than having kids and then developing that stuff later, is you develop in your 20s and 30s, your worldview and your philosophy, your personal constitution, and then you have kids later. In which case you're going to then struggle to have time to continue to develop, but hopefully you've laid enough of a foundation. So I think it balances out, but I would have preferred to have been changing nappies and going through screaming babies, you know, in my early 20s than my early 30s. So I sympathize with those in their 40s that are doing it. I can certainly think of better things to be doing in my 40s than dealing with screaming babies, because you just want peace and quiet as a man. I think the most important thing for developing your personal constitution is peace and quiet. And if you're just in constant baby family chaos, you can't really develop like your drive, your mission, your focus. You're kind of just caught up in the feminine chaos of the babies. So it makes me think a lot about our ancestors and our ancestral culture. A lot of ancient Germanic and Celtic cultures, the father didn't really have much of a, this is what I've read. I don't know if this is fact, but what I've read is that the fathers didn't have much input until the sons turned 10. And there was sort of a transfer of ownership. Men sort of stayed out of the mums and bubs club, so to speak, and the toddlers and all that. Obviously, you're still there. You're still present. But, you know, there's a water fight usually. So, yeah, not until a boy's around 10 years old is they're more of that one-on-one time, like consistently.
I could imagine you would feel, once you've had a child, even more of a drive to make a difference and to do something that makes you useful. Do you find that's a sensation you've experienced after having a kid?
Yeah, absolutely. It's what ties us to the infinite. So I believe that our children are our afterlife and that we heal this world by making better humans. I think that's the primary point of what we're doing. We make better humans. We're in this mess because of shit humans. We can talk about the Jews. We can talk about, you know, the Africans. We can talk about all these horrible circumstances, economic pressures. But all of this, in my opinion, is secondary to the quality of humans we're producing. And if we produce better quality humans in terms of environment, stock, that software, you know, what operating system, what personal constitution are you plugging into them? How are you explaining the world to them, and how are you helping them grow and adapt and overcome this dystopian society that we live in? So to me, that's absolutely crucial. And it's extremely motivating because, yeah, it's like when you have kids, then you're trying to create a better world for them, not just like your motivation is now rooted to the center. Yeah.
And why wouldn't you make better quality versions of yourself if you could? Why wouldn't you make copies of yourself? I mean, our own lives in the span of all existence, eternity, are absurdly short. Our lives are like a blip on the screen. And we are here now because our parents, their parents, all made copies of themselves. We are just copies of our forefathers, forebearers, you know. So, you know, I've always believed the same thing too. Like, what is a greater purpose than trying to breed a higher humanity? At the end of the day, that's the only real meaning of life that in this physical realm we can understand to be true and worth pursuing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, onto the news stories. I think I'll just play this clip. Actually, I'll get you guys to react. I know a lot of people have probably seen it, but this is the Premier of Victoria, Jacinta Allan, announcing these new laws that they want to pass.
Today, the Government of Victoria renews its promise to Jews and to everyone of every background. Whoever you are, whoever you pray to, you deserve to be safe and welcome here in this state. And today, too, we support that promise with strong action. Strong action to fight hate and help Victorians heal. Action that I will now outline. We will be setting a standard that we do not tolerate anti-Semitism. We do not tolerate anti-Semitism. Just as we do not tolerate any form of hate, racism, or discrimination against a Jew, a Muslim, a Sikh, a Hindu, a Chinese Victorian, or against a woman, against a gay, lesbian, or trans person. It's all despicable. All racism is wrong. All racism is evil. It's hateful. It's corrosive. And anti-Semitism is racism. And there are too many. There are too many who want to qualify anti-Semitism or make excuses for it. And I want to make it absolutely clear that I never will. We've also had enough of the protests that have caused division and disruption in our streets. Now, peaceful protests can and must be protected in this state. Protests that harm others cannot. Firstly, we will ban the flags and symbols of listed terrorist organisations in public. That includes Hamas, Hezbollah, and several other groups, including white national extremists and radical racist, violent extremist right-wing groups. We will also ban the use. We'll ban the use of face masks and balaclavas at protests. We know they are being used to conceal identities, shield agitators from crowd control measures like capsicum spray. Well, face masks aren't a free pass to break the law. And there should be no place to hide in this state if you're a racist, stirring up hate on the streets. And we're also going to ban the use of glue, rope, chains, locks, and other dangerous attachment devices the protesters use to cause maximum disruption and also endanger others. There was an incident that occurred, that an incident that was both rightly condemned, but also an incident that became the genesis of the work that we have released on introducing stronger anti-vilification laws to the Victorian Parliament. But we know it's rearing its head again, and we will act. We will legislate to protect the right for people to gather and pray, free from fear, free from harassment, and free from intimidation from
Yeah. Notice how she only mentions enemies of the Jewish community. Like, apparently anti-fascist violence is fine. One of the boys had his car firebombed about a year ago, around Christmas a year ago. That was leftist extremism. But apparently that's not a problem because they don't cause any issue for the Jewish community. They only target the enemies of Jews. It's an important, important point, I think.
No, of course. Also, you notice there she didn't mention in the list of protected groups whites or any religions that whites practice in any serious number when she was mentioning religions. So, you know, it's typical, but it's nevertheless exposing, you know, what we say is true. It's revealing. The system is showing its face that, as you just said quite accurately, the number one protected community is the Jews. No one is allowed to criticize them. And then the number two protected communities are basically everyone who isn't white. The banning face masks thing, that will be interesting. Obviously, we use them at demonstrations. But we also get criticized a lot for using them. So now we're just going to have to probably, when they pass these laws in Victoria, we're going to have to do demonstrations without face masks.
I got to say, this could work to your advantage. You guys could look cooler without the masks. I mean, you're good-looking boys. This could be a bit blessing.
There's been internal debates about it. Like, a lot of us want to take the masks off. So, you know, and I think it will make us look more human to the public. So, it could backfire. Like, the Jews have banned the Roman salute. They've banned the masks. And everyone says, I like what you guys do, but the balaclavas and the Roman salutes, you know, that's not going to appeal to normies. Well, the Jews are forcing us to have normie appeal, you know. So if this is how they're going to play it, I guess we're going to have to play it by these rules. You know, it is what it is. It'll be interesting to see if it ends up backfiring on the Jews and they just end up making us more popular with the public. So I think also the Jews are making themselves less popular with the public because they're making this very explicit. Like, for a very long time, when you start talking about the Jews in Australia, people are like, what are you, like, you know, this is crazy talk. And also it's very abstract. You're talking about the banking system or international finance or things happening in America, things happening in the Middle East, things happening historically in Europe. It doesn't feel very real and important to average everyday Australians and their average everyday lives. But this is very explicit. This is the Jews coming after your freedoms in Australia in 2024. This is the Jews attacking you, flexing on you. And so now the Jewish problem isn't just some abstract problem. It isn't just some thing that fringe people talk about. Now this is actually something that everyday Australians have to be confronted with, which is that they live in a Jewish-dominated society. And why does 0.4% of the population get to order the government around? Why are the major parties falling all over themselves to grovel to this group? They're not a significant voter base. There's barely any Jewish voters. So the only reason that they could be groveling to them is because they have money and power. It's the only reason. They have a lot of it. And that should concern you, that your government is beholden to a tiny ethnic group with incredible money and power that can essentially, according to the whims of its hysteria, trash your rights. But what's interesting is that I'm seeing a lot of criticism for these new laws from the far left. And also, maybe I don't mind that Antifa is not allowed to wear masks anymore. you know, they're also going to bring in anti-doxing laws in Australia, which the Jews pushed for because some Jews got doxed by pro-Palestinian activists or whatever. So they're going to ban doxing. They're going to ban face masks. What's Antifa going to do now? Like, their whole strategy is kind of fucked. Like, they can't go on the
really.
Streets.
Not really. Just disguises aren't banned. You can just wear disguises as long as it's not like a face covering.
No, what kind of disguise can you wear that isn't a face covering?
There's like stockings that change your face, but they're not really a mask. Or you could wear, and they don't even look like you're wearing
a
mask.
I don't know. I think the law might still cover that. I mean, we don't know the exact legislation right now, but I would anticipate they would still. I anticipate they wouldn't leave any of those easy loopholes like that.
You never know.
I guess we'll see. Yeah, I guess we'll see. But I think, you know, it's interesting. Antifa's going to have to take the masks off. They can't dox people anymore. Now, you're going to be able to sue the left if they dox you for, you know, being a white nationalist or something and try and get you fired from your job. You can go after them now. Media too. So that's interesting.
We'll see how that law develops. Does anyone actually do that, though? No one on the right seems to sue anyone. Well, there's been a couple of instances.
Well, they should. But it's not a common. We need to. We need to try and make use of these laws, and because doxing is one of the main weapons the enemy uses to keep people scared to speak out, or even to maintain anonymous accounts or whatever. So, you know, there's been plenty of people over the years that I know of that have, you know, been advocates for our way of thinking to some level or degree that have been doxed and they've been taken out, wiped off the internet, or had their careers ruined or their lives ruined in one way, shape or form. So that's interesting, but that's a bit of a separate issue. But the point is that the rules are changing, but yeah, like I'm annoyed at the rules changing, but it isn't actually the worst set of rule changes. Like we can adapt to these rule changes. It's not going to stop us. So, you know, it all they're doing is showing their hand, but they're not really getting a huge win out of this. Like it seems to me to be a misstep where they're pissing everyone off. I've seen the left is pissed off. Libertarians are pissed off. A lot of people that are kind of more pro-Israel or whatever that are on the conservative side, they're really struggling to defend this. You know, they look kind of silly at this point because now it's not just about being pro-Palestine or it's not just about being pro this group or that group. Now it's like, well, our freedoms. I thought the whole point of being allied with Israel is that they're a liberal democracy and the Judeo-Christian values and our rights and freedoms and all this bullshit. Well, they're just showing that that's all nonsense and doesn't mean anything.
Hang on. Did you actually think that?
Well, I never thought that, but I'm talking about what conservatives think. I'm saying like the narratives are kind of collapsing to defend the Jews from a lot of corners ideologically. And they're losing a lot of support from all corners. You know, when I've been making I'll go and leave comments on Twitter that'll be calling out the Jews, but they'll be on some anti-Israel comment. And then I see all the likes are like all leftists. Like a lot of leftists are genuinely like anti-Semitic at this point. They aren't just anti-Israel. Like, I don't know, the times are changing. The Jews don't have a lot of friends and they're rapidly destroying their friendships in a lot of corners. And they've just got all this power. They're holding on. They're kind of ham-fisting through the power and influence that they have on the basis of their finances and their elite institutional power, but they're not doing a very good of selling it. Their optics is terrible. Their public relations is terrible. So it's a perfect environment for us to spread our message against them. So I invite them to make missteps like this, to be honest. I actually think it's in a certain way, like it's a bad thing that what they're doing. Obviously, we don't want these laws, but in a certain way, I invite them to do things like this because it's only proving our point and strengthening our position politically in a certain way. What do you think about that, Tom? Do you agree or disagree?
I'll let Blair go first.
I was just thinking maybe in the long run, it will create a strong sense of dissatisfaction, disloyalty in the general community, or maybe they can downgrade the quality of the people so much that kind of fear police state will be enough to administer them long term. I just think like in the immediate future, having laws against anti-Semitism, which, you know, it's quite a vague basis for any set of laws, which leads to the police kicking your door down because of some comment you made on the internet that's offensive, racially offensive, whatever, probably isn't a good thing in the short term. You know, a lot of guys.
The anti-vilification laws are concerning. Those are different laws than these ones, but yeah, those are the more concerning ones. Those we're going to have to fight hard in the courts.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like there are enough people with the right sort of stuff and legal prowess to actually put up a good fight, but I could be wrong. The Clive Palmers out there might have a building full of lawyers that may be useful for that purpose, but it's probably about time some people who still believe in protecting Australia dedicate some resources to defending the rights of Australians. I mean, I don't have any power. I'm just sitting down here in the suburbs trying to run my business and doing my best to pay my taxes. I'm not the sort of person that knows lots of lawyers and that has a lot of influence in this field, but I don't know. Hopefully people out there get the message sooner or later. And I'm not seeing any great effort right now in the courts to actually establish, boundaries, freedom of expression for Australians to challenge this legislation that, is used to justify hate speech crime and stuff like that. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this kind of stuff is just hushed up and I don't know about it. I'm just saying that I think in the short term, all these things can be bad. However, I understand what you're saying. It's clear overreach, and it lends to the criticism or observations that we've already made, and we're trying to make other people aware of, that the Jewish people do have a great deal of power in our country, undue power. How did they get it? Who's allowing them to have it? And how do we take back power for ourselves and establish a destiny, establish an existence, a future existence for ourselves as Australians? Because right now we don't seem to have one.
No, exactly. But that what you were saying, though, there was a coalescence of support around Jacob and his court battles, and that's going up to courts. We don't expect the lower courts to strike down laws and rule in our favor, but we do expect to have a strong case going up to the Supreme Court and then particularly in the High Court. And the same thing with this anti-vilification legislation. What is key is that the first people that get charged with this stuff, which will probably be our guys in a lot of these situations, because they're going to come for us with these laws, is riding it all the way up to the High Court. And for that, we need community support from the nationalist community in general. But not just that, we need to go out beyond that and get libertarians and other adjacent factions that care about defending these rights.
Here's the thought.
To support it as well.
How long will white Australian cops willingly enforce these laws? Is there always going to be people who are willing to trade the future of their country for a meager wage? Or eventually, are most cops going to fall off and be replaced with Indians, Chinese, and so forth?
Well, that's already happening, isn't it? Because of COVID. I mean, cops left during COVID, and now they're bringing in foreigners as police, and they're not just immigrant.
Well, my point, police, my
they're
point
literally
is there.
Recruiting from foreign countries.
We're going to have a significant physical advantage over the police force if it ends up being completely Indian, for example. And so it's like, that'll be interesting times. That'll be sporty times.
No, I would definitely like a situation where NSN's on the streets and we swell up. We got some better, bigger numbers. And
we're the police now.
The G cops show up and it's on. That'd be a funny interaction if and when it happens. What a juxtaposition.
It'll make more people support us, more white Australians support us when they see that it's Indian cops versus the white lads that have to be masked off and maybe have to carry Australian flags and, all the other sort of optics cuckery we're forced into by the state. I think that's just going to garner more and more public support. So in a strange kind of accelerationist or anti-accelerationist way, the government is strengthening our position in the eyes of the public. They're doing all these things in hopes that we give up, but we're actually not going to give up. We've picked this strategy because it's the most effective at creating that juxtaposition or that shock and awe strategy to wake the public up into action. And over time, we're going to become more and more legitimate, but it's very hard to create legitimacy when no one puts up any opposition. And if they do put up opposition, it's so tame that it doesn't even get any attention. So you have to get the people's attention first. I'm not saying you get attention and then you start mellowing out your message. You maintain a strong message and everyone knows what you're about. And most people have a decent memory, even if they get confused by the current thing every 2 weeks. They still have a decent memory as to, well, those are the racists. And we're normalizing racism, we're normalizing white nationalism, and white people are overall getting to the point where they're just upset with how the state of the country is. And then they're about to have Christmas and they want to just relax and wind down and celebrate. And it's a spiritual and it's a cultural time of year for white people. And they turn on the news and it's just Jews complaining that there's not enough laws against people that hate them. And as a white person, you're watching that and you're just like, when are these Jews going to shut up? Are they ever going to be happy? And then you hear that more money's going to them. And we're in a cost of living crisis. And if you've been paying attention, you'd know that they already get hundreds of millions of dollars a year for their so-called security, which they funnel into their fake security companies. They launder money back into the synagogue and probably do all sorts of dubious things with it once they've got it there. And on top of that, it goes into CSG here in Victoria, which is a Mossad front group, which is funded by the Australian taxpayer and the Victorian taxpayer. So on top of that, the way that the politicians are handling it is the worst possible way to handle it. I guess they're just not equipped with any sort of nuance, but I personally am sick. And I say this almost every stream with you guys when you put a politician up, like the video up. And my initial instinct or reaction was, I feel like I'm in primary school. Like listening to this, Jacinta Allen, we do not do anti-Semitism. What's going on there? Clear eyes. You all right, Blair? We back.
Yeah, it's just too many just eye drops. My eyes get a bit dry. But don't you agree though that it's like the Jewish version of rioting? I said this to Joel the other day. The Jewish response to the synagogue fire is like the Jewish version of a riot. It's not physical. It's like, you know, complaining, give us money, give us rights, give us more laws.
Yeah, they're a feminine race. It's a passive-aggressive response.
If the government could learn, see, the way the Assyrians reacted to a terror attack against Bishop Murray Murray, the Christian Assyrians, is they physically rioted. And the government's response to that was no tolerance. They arrested the Christians and made a strong effort to demonstrate themselves, you know, controlling the situation, containing the situation. This riot's not acceptable. Why doesn't the government take the same position towards the Jewish version of rioting, which is just, as I said, kvetching?
Because they're all just a bunch of primary school teachers. These politicians aren't leaders. They're just primary school teachers. And they just lecture the public the way a primary school teacher lectures a small child. Like, we do not do anti-Semitism. We do not do anti-Semitism. I mean, who are they talking to? And then the other thing that I noticed was, it's a little bit of a will to power, to be honest, to give them a bit of fairness, not that they deserve it, but they haven't passed these laws yet, but they always speak as if they've already passed them or that they're going to pass. So they're saying, we're going to, well, that's technically not correct, not to sound like a conservative, but you're going to try to change the law. That's what they're planning on doing. You're going to try. What the accurate statement would be is, we're going to try to change the law to strengthen these you know, religious vilification laws. But they didn't say that. They said, we're going to change the law. So although it's got a bit of a will to power and there's a bit of strength to that, it's the only strength they really portray is when Jews are under attack, all of a sudden the government are very strong. And but the problem is that that might work on some people, but the average Joe wants to at least pretend that we live in a democracy. And when that is no longer the tone at which they're being spoken to by their leaders, they're not going to be looking for democratic or liberal means to counter the way that the center-left is speaking to them. They're going to be looking for a slightly more authoritarian tone amongst the center-right. Which I guess goes into our next point, doesn't it, Joel? The self-implosion of one nation. Where the center is going now is in two places. You know, the left are just doubling down, and the right doesn't know what to do and doesn't have any representation within the Liberal Party or Labor Party or One Nation for that matter. And they're absolutely begging now for a semi-authoritarian center right. That has that same kind of tone, because there has to be a balancing. There has to be this harmony for politics to survive as a democracy. there has to be equal weights on either side of the center. And otherwise it keeps tipping one way until the left take total state power and just tell you what's going on. They don't even consult. So
we talked about on the show last week.
Move on to the next subject, or was there more?
Yeah, I will. I'll bring that.
Jews.
Yeah, I'll bring it in. Yeah, I'll bring it in. But I just going to reiterate what we were talking about last week. I don't know if I used the term bitchocracy. It's like, yes, whoever bitches the hardest rules. But I use a term like that, and I was describing how, like, Anthony Albanese, when he gave his statements last week, he was like, Jews need to feel safe. And I was like, politicians didn't used to talk like this, even back in the 2000s, where they talk about feelings. Like, it's a total, like, feminization of the language. Like you said, when you use the analogy of a primary school, that's basically the level that public discourse is at now. But it's obviously very effective, because when you move the discussion into feelings, then you don't actually need to like back it up with any kind of fairness or facts or whatever. It's just like, I think I made the analogy on Twitter. Like our relationship with the Jews is like a shitty marriage where nothing you do is ever good enough. And nothing they do, you can never like bring up. Otherwise you're mean and you're making them feel horrible and so on. And so that's what the Jews want. They want to classify all criticism of their behavior as anti-Semitism. No criticism of Jewish behavior is tolerated, full stop, end of discussion. But at the same time, they want to then dictate policy. They want to basically run society. It's like, how can you be in charge, but then at the same time also demand zero criticism, like, and then play the victim, like, oh, like, I can't believe you would say that. That's just, it's just like another Holocaust, you know, it's ridiculous. But that's literally the situation that we're in. And that's fundamentally unstable. Like, yeah, they're trying to brute force it, but ultimately you need to rule with carrots and sticks. And at the moment it's all stick and no carrot. And Jews don't know how to rule, just like, you know, it's like having a single mom. Single moms don't know how to raise young boys because they don't understand how to, you know, they don't have that innate ability basically to know when to basically go hard and when to go soft. If you are just constantly, when you're raising a child, I mean, I'm not a father, but this is obviously true. If you're just constantly super strict and just like being like, don't do this, don't do that, and constantly like bitching and moaning at everything that they do, they're not going to take any of it that seriously, because it's no matter what they do, you're just reacting in the same way. And it's really more an expression of
dogs are the same. If you keep giving dogs incessant, stupid commands, they stop listening to anything. You only give a dog a command when it's necessary. It's frivolous.
They don't take you seriously. If you want to instill fear in a population, you wait until you're very, very upset about something. You have your red lines, and then you get really angry. But otherwise, you're chill. And that's how people respect your rules, because they know, like, okay, well, those are the red lines. They're very clear. But this is the complete opposite in our society today. All the lines are ambiguous. All these new laws that they're bringing in, they have all these ambiguous definitions. There's all these double standards and triple standards based upon feelings. Well, if this group does it, it makes this group of people feel upset, and they're victims for this reason. And so we have to care about this. But when the roles are reversed, it's just retarded. So there's no legitimacy or coherence to any of this. All they're going to do is push people into more sympathy to our position when we call it out. But I would say, secondarily, the main reason why the left is winning and the conservatives are losing in general, and the Jewish issue is different. On the Jewish issue, the conservatives are even deeper up the asshole of the Jews than the left, frankly. The Jews completely just own the conservative movement. It's grotesque. But on every other issue, you know, on these issues of, you know, free speech and political correctness and wokeness and, anti-white double standards and so on, the conservative attitude is always, because in politics, you've got a left-wing position, a right-wing position, and everything that happens is centrism. You never get what the far left and the far right want never actually happens within a democracy. Everything that happens is always basically at the center in perpetuity. Now, what left-wingers do is they run away from the center towards the most radical left-wing position that they can possibly go for. And what that does is it then stretches the Overton window, and then the center then shifts towards the left. What right-wingers do is go, hey, or conservatives, I should say, is, oh, hey, the center always wins. So let's go and jump in the center and occupy the center and be like, we're the reasonable people in the center. We're not like these fringe lunatics. And then we'll win because the center always wins. But what they do by jumping in the center is they then push the center away from them, in between them and wherever the left is. And so when you chase the center, you're constantly chasing the center and you'll never grab it, because you're constantly pushing it away from yourself while you chase after it. You have to run away from the center to drag it in your direction. That's the basic mechanics of a liberal democracy. And this is why they always lose, even if they win. Conservatives win most elections. Like, Liberal Party was just running for, like, was just in power for like a decade. There was a brief period where you had like Rudd and Gillard for a few years. Then you had Howard in charge for ages. If you go through Australian history, the conservatives pretty much are always in power. The left barely gets power, but when the left gets power, they completely change the entire country, initiate all these new reforms, and then the next conservatives that get in basically have the same policies and just like entrench them. So even though the right wins elections, the left always wins on the issues, all the big issues, unless it's the Jews. Then when it comes to the Jews, then that goes out the window, right? But I want to bring the reason why I articulate that is because I want to bring up this story. So we talked about Parminder Singh on the show last week, who is a Sikh guy who can't speak English properly. Yeah, he speaks with this broken English. And he's being run for the upper house in the upcoming Western Australian election by One Nation. And a Twitter account popped up a few days ago, just after I wrote my opinion piece in The Noticer, which, by the way, go check it out. It's called One Nation Goes Full Retard. I articulated basically the state of things with the Parminder Singh issue earlier in the week, but now all this new stuff has come to light. So this page dropped called Parminder Singh One Nation Exposed. This guy says he's a disgruntled former One Nation candidate and member with direct information over the coming days on Rod Caddies, who is the leader of One Nation in Western Australia, and Parminder Singh. Now, what he exposed was this. Oh, well, one of the things he exposed. So Parminder Singh has a company called Punjabi Properties, and you can see on the back of these shirts, which are official One Nation merchandise, Punjabi Properties is displayed all across the back of these shirts. So like, what, One Nation is now sponsored by Punjabi Properties? This is all happening while Pauline Hanson is posting about how we've got to end foreign ownership and immigration is too high and all this kind of stuff. He's posting here about how Rod Caddies is blocking everyone. He blocked me. He's blocking all of everyone who's asking questions. He's not going to take accountability for his actions.
Who is Rod Caddies?
The guy who runs One Nation in Western Australia.
Right.
He put up a video. I think he put up the video actually after we did it on the show last week. I'll pull up that video soon. And in that video, he basically wheeled this Parminder guy out to explain that he agreed. Actually, no, he agrees with all of Pauline Hanson's policies. Even though we've got him on record saying the exact opposite, even as early, like earlier this year on his Facebook account. And also he ran for office. When he ran for office in local government, I believe, I can't remember which level of government was, but when he ran without the One Nation endorsement, one of his policies was repopulating rural areas with immigrants. His policy was to bring immigrants into country towns to help build up their population. That doesn't sound like anti-immigration to me. It sounds like the exact opposite. And he actually reiterated that statement on his Facebook account in his customary tortured, broken English with terrible grammar that barely makes sense. But you could at least get that's what he was saying. He also defended the student visa thing, saying, oh, well, if we don't bring student visas in, or students in on student visas, how are universities going to make money? And when he was talking to What's News on a video that we watched on the show last week, you know, on a phone interview, he was like, oh, Indian immigrants are good because they bring money into Australia. And he even made the point that, oh, well, white Australians, you know, they don't want to work hard enough. They don't want to work on weekends. They don't want to work 80 to 100 hour weeks. They expect to be paid over $30 an hour. And, you know,
perspective, he actually did say that. He said he thinks Australians are lazy because they won't work 100 hours a week. 100 hours a week is over 14 hours per day, every day of the week. That's the idea of a normal working week for this dude, who's running now Western Australia and One Nation as a candidate.
Are you serious? This is like the slave mentality of Indians. This is why the globalists, the big business, the Jews, that's why they want to bring Indians into the, or one of the reasons why they want to bring them. I mean, for some groups like far left and the Jews, they just want to replace us out of like racial animus towards the white race. But from a business standpoint, one of the reasons they want to bring it and a political standpoint is because they're a slave race. You know, every time I've had a conversation, unfortunately in my life, when I've been subjected to Indians through my employment, whenever I've had the misfortune of having to make small talk with them, all they talk about is how to make money and how to spend money. That's literally the substance of everything that they want to talk about every single time. They have economic mindset like of a slave. They don't have like a sense of freedom, a sense of like higher spirituality or any of these things that white people have, a sense of higher dignity or honor or any of these things. And so that makes them easier to rule. That's why we could show up to India during the British Empire with 20,000 Anglos and run their whole continent of like hundreds of millions of slave browns. And it was, we did it for hundreds of years and it was easy because, you know, they're a pathetic race. And this is why they want to bring them in, because they'll accept shitty conditions and they'll work long hours and they'll work three different jobs because all they care about is money, and they're not, the quality of life in India sucks. It's still better than back home. And this is great for big business, but it's depressing your wages and destroying your quality of life. And that's the whole point of voting One Nation, right? They're the one party that's going to shut down the borders and stop this shit. But now they're running this guy.
That's exactly why the financial sector lobbies the major parties to bring in as many Indians as possible, because they'll live in little jeep boxes, as Joel calls them. They'll work for less and they'll work longer hours. And all big business cares about is people working more for less. Obviously, the quality of the goods being produced isn't going to be as good, but they don't care about that. People are going to still have to buy it if they're the only ones offering it. So, yeah, it is all just about replacing the Australian working class with a more manageable slave race. I've been saying that for years, actually. What do you think,
Tom?
Yeah,
well, it's just true.
You think, do you think they have souls? Do you think Indians have souls?
We're going deep here.
I do, but I believe that souls aren't really a binary. I believe that they're a spectrum. So I believe dogs have souls. So, of course, Indians would have them as well, but they're just not very large. They're not very high. They've got a very mediocre soul. There would be maybe one in a million that would have a very high soul, like a high Aryan soul. White people have huge potential in their soul, but they don't use it. White people are like the stereotype of the, you know, talented person that never uses what they have. White people don't
just
know
capable, is just capable of so they, much they that they never just really decides to do nothing
towards things because they're kind of.
Has Tom cut out or have I cut out?
Yeah, Tom's frozen up for me.
Yeah, he'll be back. He'll be back.
Seems like his connection was a little bit dodgy before. Hopefully he gets it sorted. While we're waiting for him to figure that out.
He's back.
Oh, you're back,
I like
Tom?
I like hearing these takes, though. I like hearing these deep esoterics.
He still seems kind of frozen up, though.
Yeah. Am I back? Can you hear me?
You're back now.
We're in the first world country of Australia. I pay the top rate for the internet by the
apparently the NBN maintenance crew is Indian now as well.
Yeah, I think One Nation has been taking tips, or the NBN have been taking tips from One Nation on their hiring policies. You know, they got the $25 an hour jeets doing maintenance. Anyway,
infrastructure will fall apart in our lifetime. I guarantee everyone that. I mean, I have friends in South Africa and they tell me that you may as well live rurally as long as you're protected, because in the cities, there's just constant blackouts. There's just constant infrastructure issues. With what Elon Musk is doing with the Starlink, it doesn't matter whether you're rural or in the city anymore. So the infrastructure is garbage. I can't believe how much the internet drops out. But back on topic, prior to your question about whether Indians have souls or not, just the blatant, it's like some strange form of corruption. I've never personally seen
He's gone again.
We lost him again.
That's really frustrating. No, I was. He was going to say something good. He was about to say something.
Yeah, he was cooking.
Good.
He was about to cook.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
This is a pain in the ass.
Are you back?
What an absolute pain in the ass. I don't know. Yeah. I'm going to drop off. I'll just make my last point, but the internet is just intolerable. And you guys are all blurry for me. I thought it was your internet's playing up, and I was like, sweet, my internet's fine. And then I clicked on the stream. I was like, oh, it's actually me.
But, yeah. I'm going to blame Zog.
All I was going to say was that...
DDoSing you right now.
It's just excellent. It's excellent to see that One Nation... This won't be forgiven, what they've done, especially in WA. It might be forgiven in the rest of the country because, you know, Notice the News is not the, you know, the Sky News yet, but one day it will be. But in WA, this is not going to be forgiven. And it's good to see that that it even led to or impacted or pressured the one sitting MP or senator to actually drop off. I don't know if that's been covered on the stream yet, but I saw that.
No, I was going to bring that up
recently as well.
Yeah. Is he going again?
Seems that way. The elusive Sewell.
I think Zog have taken him out. They've taken out our boy. We're going to have to ride this one, the two of us. But
we have to keep marching forward, guys. We have to keep going. There's going to be casualties.
Yeah. We've got to keep moving forward. Anyway, so I'm going to go through, I'm going to like unpack all the details to fill everybody in on some of the updates to the Parminda Gate, if you will. And then we'll do some analysis. So this flyer came out. So there was a video, which I will pull up in a second. And in the video, Parminder Singh was Rod Caddy's, the guy who runs One Nation in WA. He got Parminder Singh on and said, there's a lot of people online that are spreading all this misinformation saying that Parminder Singh is pro-immigration. And I've got him here to say that, no, he's not got those views. And basically, Parminder Singh just more or less said, I read all the One Nation policies on Pauline Hanson's website and I agree with the policies. He didn't actually like articulate anything specific about him agreeing with those policies or why he agrees with those policies, which, you know, kind of gives itself to the accusation that he's a grifter, basically, that he's identified One Nation as the biggest party that is stupid enough to give him the nomination. Because if he tried to rock up to the Liberals or whatever and throw around his curry shop money, it wouldn't go very far. The Liberals are getting that big, like, Jew money coming in, you know, from the property developer Jews and the banks and all the rest of it. So they wouldn't be interested. He doesn't have that kind of high roll of money. If he went to the Labour Party, well, the Labour Party, they would run Indians, but they'll run Indians that can speak English properly that have been to university. You know, they're actually a serious professional political outfit to a degree. And so I don't know how big the Greens are at in WA, but, you know, they're going to run people that actually are ideologically competent. This guy can barely string three sentences together that make any sense. Like, he has like a really superficial he's probably got like an 80 to 85 IQ. Like, he's not smart. He's not well educated. He's not a good speaker. So anyway, the next option then is One Nation. That's the fourth biggest party. And he's obviously bought his way in. It's alleged that he made a $20,000 donation, which sounds like nothing. If that's all it costs to buy your way into One Nation, maybe we should try and like do a GoFundMe to like buy the nomination for Blair or something. we could crowdfund that from you guys in like 2 days. But
no, they wouldn't take it. They're too concerned about optics to take me.
Yeah, they're too concerned about optics to take you, a well-spoken white Australian that people actually like, that's actually a nationalist. But they will take some fat, hairy Sikh that can barely speak English correctly and can barely articulate what policies he supports. Anyway, he put out this document here. It says down the bottom, authorized by Parminder Singh. So this is put out on behalf of One Nation from his office. And it says here, we want One Nation, not a divided nation. And the key beliefs, key belief one, support for immigrants. You know, immigrants are great, basically. Key belief two, Balanced immigration. One nation is not anti-immigration, but we recognize allowing too many people in too quickly constrained services. This is a really big watering down of one nation's policies. From immigration is causing a housing crisis, we need to cut it down to net zero, we need to, you know, keep, like, you know, when Pauline first got elected to parliament, she gave a speech saying we're in danger of getting flooded by Asians, we're losing our culture. Now look at One Nation. They're being cucked by some, you know, curry shop owner. Apparently, as well, so it says here, all the One Nation WA merchandise at events had a logo on the back that said Punjabi Properties. The logo is bigger than the One Nation logo. Ask anyone who attended the event in Mandurah November 9. And the food at the event was curry supplied by Parminder's Curry Company or restaurant. So you'd go down to the One Nation rally. Look at all these white boomers. They're going down to the One Nation rally because, you know, there's too many immigrants coming into this country and they want something done about it. And they get given their One Nation shirt with Punjabi Properties on the back and served curry.
That's a bad joke.
And then some fat Sikh gets up there and speaks in broken English. And doesn't even understand the policies of the party that he's joined. That's the state of One Nation. I mean, like, it's bad. Like,
sad.
This is levels of cuck servitism previously not thought possible. I mean, it's not even competent cuck servitism. It's like, it's just embarrassing. What I said on my opinion piece was, it's actually more respectable if they were paid off to run this guy. It was purely a financial decision. If they thought this was a good idea on any metric, that's actually more embarrassing than just being like shills, in my opinion. That's how bad this guy is.
I was just going to ask you a question. Do you think they're foreseeing an increase in the Indian population and they want a piece of that? They can see that a lot of that's going to go towards either Liberal or Labor. And the strategy is, we need a piece of the, you know, Indian voting bloc that's going to be set up in Australia, already is being set up in Australia by the other parties. Is it got something to do with that? What do you think?
It can't be for the Indian voting bloc. They're not that significant of a voting bloc. And the reality is, I mean, we've done...
I don't know, man. There's a lot of Indians in India. How many Indians are in India?
Well, in India, but I'm talking about here.
Yeah, but they're going to keep coming in. There's going to be hundreds of thousands every few months. It's going to end up being millions.
Isn't One Nation supposed to be stopping them from coming in? Isn't that the whole...
They're not. So they must be thinking, well, if they're going to come anyway, we might as well capitalize.
The Labour Party. The majority of Indians that have done the studies, they vote Labour. And then Labour are going and making deals saying, we're going to bring in shitloads of Indians and we love Indians. And then Liberals come out and say, we love Indians just as much as Labour, actually, and they're going and making deals with the Indians and so on. So why is One Nation? Is it really think that it's going to convince the Indian community, hey, we're the anti-immigration party that everyone calls racist and everyone in the party, everyone who votes for us are all like white bogans or whatever, according to the, you know, the common
trope. I'm just trying to make sense of it.
Vote for us instead. We've gone through them on the show. Like, the majority of Australians want immigration cut. They want immigration lowered. And they don't have anyone to vote for, basically, except One Nation to do that. So that's, One Nation should be, if they sell themselves as the anti-immigration party, well, yeah, okay, Indians are coming in, but fucking over 70% of voters are white. So selling, keep the Indians out to white voters, and in WA's got a higher than 70% white ratio, I think. It's like almost 80% white. So trying to sell an anti-immigration message to white voters, people that actually vote for you, don't you think that should be the priority, not trying to market yourself to the 4% of the population that's Indian, that's already voting for your political enemies, that don't like your policies anyway? Like, that's just fucking retarded politics. Like, it's insane. And this is what I was saying before about, like, conservatives running to the center to try and occupy the center, but the center escapes them. Like, One Nation's job is to run away from the center and to stretch the discourse out, force the Liberals to justify themselves. Like, the Liberals right now, the majority of Liberal voters want immigration cut, but the Liberals are avoiding the issue. Well, One Nation, if they did a proper anti-immigration campaign and sold themselves as the true right-wing party that's going to shut down the borders, they'd get shitloads of votes. They'd be very popular. But no, they want to try and prove how not racist they are by running some fat Indian. And he was the guy, by the way, we talked about on the show when Pauline went to the Sikh temple over in Perth. It was this guy's Sikh temple. He organized all of that. Pauline in the like that headscarf turban thing.
He must have given him more than 20 grand. It must have been more than 20 grand. He must have given him something else.
I hope so, because, I mean, it's embarrassing, man. It's embarrassing.
It seems like he's bought out the whole party. That's what it seems like.
Well, over in WA, at least. Yeah, and people were saying, oh, it's not Pauline's fault because it's the WA wing of the party and they don't control it. But it's like, that's bullshit. She controls
the party. It's her party. She's ultimately in charge of everything that happens.
Yeah,
and she should just pull the pin on him. She should just pull the pin on him. It's like, get rid of this guy. What's he talking shit for about wanting more Indians? We're against that. People are voting for us because we're against that. Get rid of this guy. Why can't you do that, Pauline? That's what everyone's waiting for.
The party's literally called Pauline Hanson's One Nation. Like, her name's in the name of the party. Like, you know what I mean? Anyway, I'll pull this video up for everyone's viewing benefit. This is what I was describing before. This is that Rod Caddy's joke, and who runs WA One Nation. A lot of nationalists have spoken to me privately, by the way, who were involved in Western Australian One Nation, and they hate this guy. Like, this guy and others involved have been advocating for moderating and cucking for years and alienating a lot of the true nationalists in the party over there, cucking to the Aboriginals, now cucking to the Jeets. I mean, it's embarrassing. But anyway, I'll play this for everyone's benefit.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to jump on here and have a chat to Parminder. I mean, there's been a few things put around on social media lately about immigration and how Parminder wants to, you know, flood our country with Indians, and I know for a fact that's not true, but I wanted to show you guys and let you have a listen to Parminder for himself on where he stands with One Nation and immigration. So,
hi everyone. Before I joined the One Nation Party, I read the all policies, whatever the Pauline Hanson stand for, and I fully support the net zero, the immigration policy. And if some people lucky enough to come here, I request all those people that respect the Australian culture, Australian values, and Australian constitution. Yeah. And the English is my third language. So, and I try to make a videos. That's why it's a little bit like I think in my own language first, then I speak in English. So yes, that's why it's a bit slow. So, but I'm
wow.
Nation policies.
Great stuff, Parminder. So there you have it. I mean,
he just said something I've always said, and it's something. Hang on 1 minute. I've got music playing, and I shouldn't have music playing. It's stupid. I've always said that you've got to be careful when dealing with foreign people, because even though they may learn your language and churn out sentences in some form of your language, they're thinking in their own language, and they have words and phrases for things that we don't even conceptualize often, especially if they come from a more mercantile, ruthless kind of society and culture. So he just basically admitted that in that video. He's like, I'm thinking in my own language, but then I'm speaking in yours. So what I'm actually thinking, who knows? You've just got to trust me, guys. It's pretty heavy stuff.
The excuse that he used is that he's incapable of articulating his true beliefs correctly because he can't speak English properly. How does that qualify you to be a politician in Australia if you're incapable of articulating yourself correctly in the language that Australians speak? That's immediately disqualifying, immediately. Like, it's ridiculous. But secondarily, what he said there, the grammar's horrible. Like, I support the Pauline, and so on. Like, it's embarrassing. But as he was describing, he's like, I fully support the policies of One Nation. Now, we've got all of these statements that he's made that are contrary to those policies on immigration. So he's changed his mind. Doesn't he owe us an explanation for why he changed his mind? Because he's acting like as if, it's not like he's always had these views. He's just signed up to this party that has different policies than what he's advocated before in his public statements and his previous attempts at being an independent politician. So you would owe us an explanation for why you changed your mind and why we can trust you now. But instead, what this was just like wheel him out, say he agrees, tell everyone to shut up, gaslight everyone, and then just block everyone on Twitter that's saying the opposite. I mean, absolute PR disaster for One Nation. Good work to all the boys putting pressure on. I tried to do my bit to force this kind of reaction. And then what we saw today.
Absolutely. And that is a direct, that video, let me interject quickly, is a direct response to the pressure you guys have been putting on these people. So it goes to show how influential we are as a community. They have to play ball with us because we are the people who vote for One Nation. We used to be anyway. People who are watching this video, that was supposed to be the Nationalist Party. So, you know, good effort for everyone, or good effort by everyone putting the pressure on as a result of this stupid decision.
Yeah, I see a super chat from Ukrainian Groper saying non-nation. That's pretty funny. Anyway, so this is the article in the notice that just dropped, you know, just before we went live. Western Australia's only One Nation MP suddenly quits the party. This is Ben Dawkins, who presumably joined the One Nation Party to keep the likes of Parminder out of the country. Like, that's the whole point of One Nation. It's an anti-immigration party. Anyway, he's been a member for the Southwest region since March 2023 and is, according to the notice, pro-freedom and anti-woke. He formally tendered his resignation from Pauline Hanson's party on Tuesday, saying on Thursday that he made the decision reluctantly. His resignation comes amid controversy over One Nation's selection of Sikh businessman Parminder Singh as the third upper house candidate in Western Australia due to his support for mass immigration from India. And this is like the original video. By the way, go check out this article on the Noticer, noticer.news. It's the number one article at the moment because he just got put out. And then you can watch this video by What's News here where he interviews Parminder Singh on the phone. And you can hear for yourself of what he said. The quotes here from Mr. Dawkins: I hold Pauline Hanson in high regard as a courageous advocate for everyday Australians. Indeed, Pauline Hanson's One Nation should be the party with the guts to say what you're thinking. As an independent candidate, I will continue to have the courage to speak for those who feel unheard. Blah, blah, blah. So he's obviously amicably leaving the party. But the fact that he's decided to quit right now, I mean, what other reason could it possibly be? Surely he's quitting because of this. Surely this is the final straw. What do you think?
All we can do is speculate. All we can do is speculate about that. I'm not sure. I don't know the man. I can't speak to his motivations.
Yeah, someone says here, Joel, with all due respect, this is like saying that a dog owes us an explanation for chewing your shoes. He's a fresh off the boat jeet. There isn't any explanation. He couldn't articulate one in English regardless. Well, yeah, I mean, what I was articulating
was... We don't want an explanation from him. We don't care about him and his explanation. We care about what we was an explanation from Pauline Hanson. What's going on with the party?
Yes.
We're supposed to represent the Australian people. That's what we're waiting for.
Yeah, like, how are you going to keep immigrants out of Australia if you can't even keep them out of your own party? I mean, it's pretty basic. But keep the pressure up, all of you on Twitter. Every time Pauline Hanson tweets, Malcolm Roberts tweets, any of these other One Nation accounts from anywhere in the country, get in the replies, post the links to all this stuff, keep the pressure up, keep asking the question, and just keep making it a nuisance for them because they need to, as you said, they owe us an explanation. We are nationalism in this country. You need to explain yourself to us. I saw some rumors coming out that the Libertarian Party's immigration platform is not going to be too crash hot. Then I asked some people that I knew in those circles and they said, no, actually it's going to be better than he says or whatever. I said, you guys have to get your immigration policy together and you need to come out and you need to explain to us nationalists why it's better than One Nation's. And they said, yeah, we're going to do that. So we'll see. If they cuck or they don't cuck, we'll cover it live. We'll break it down. Will they end up bringing out a policy better than One Nation's? I don't know. I'm skeptical. They've got elements in the party that seem not to care as much about immigration as an issue as others. We'll see who wins out. We'll see when the formal policy comes forward. But, you know, One Nation's in danger here. If the Libertarians put out a good immigration policy that's better than theirs, they're going to steal their votes off them. And deservedly so. And if the Libertarians don't put out a good immigration policy, I'm not going to advocate for voting for One Nation while they're running these jeets. There's no fucking way. There's no fucking way. I'm going to be telling all of our audience to not vote. If, you know, our vote has to be earned. And at the moment, none of these jokers are earning it. Like, none of them are taking this issue even like a quarter of a percent seriously compared to what they should be taking it. This is an existential issue. Our nation is being destroyed. And it's also the number one issue destroying the average Australian's quality of life, the housing crisis, you know, wage stagnation, et cetera. Immigration is being rammed down the throat of this country by big business interests, big corporate interests, big finance interests, so that they can keep making ridiculous profits while in an economy that's faltering. We've been in a per capita recession every quarter for like the last, you know, 2 years, basically. Australia's fucked. Everything is getting worse on every level. And immigration is the reason why. So, you know, the average Joe on the street definitely wants the border shut down, definitely wants something done about it.
What do you have to say, Joe? What about those people who are saying, no, it's not immigration, it's landlords putting up property prices, it's capitalism, it's greedy capitalists, that's what's destroying Australia? How do you respond to that? It's not immigrants, it's capitalists.
The way that I would respond to that is simple. Number one, these big capitalist lobby groups, like the property developer lobby, the finance lobby, the big, you know, corporate industry lobbies, they ask the government, they fund the political campaigns of the major parties, and they demand higher immigration. Their public representatives that they pay to come and advocate for their interests want more immigration. So when they say it's not immigration, it's the capitalists, well, it's like, well, the big capitalists are the ones that are deciding that they want the immigration. So you can't actually divide the two things from one another. It's just ridiculous. Like, the capitalists are telling us immigration is good for them, so it must be good for them. And if you have a Marxist worldview where you believe that the capitalists make profits under the exploitation of the working class, well, everything the capitalists do, driven by that profit motive, must be to exploit the working class, including the fact that they're pumping all this money into politics to keep immigration high against the public will, because it's not the democratic will. We've seen the polls. We've gone through them on the show. Every time they do one, every time they do a poll on immigration, immigration is wildly unpopular. So Liberal and Labor don't have the immigration policies they do because it's what their voters want. They have it because it's what their donors want, and their donors are the big capitalists. So it's just a complete non-starter of an argument.
Would it be fair to say that shutting down discussion on immigration on the grounds that it's racist is protecting the profits of the capitalists?
Absolutely. 100%. It's not even in question.
That really throws a spanner in the works, doesn't it? I wonder what came first, the chicken or the egg. Did the capitalists dream up this whole anti-racist movement and, you know, use it to usher in this new slave class that's going to live in smaller spaces, work long hours and for less, like for lower wages? Or have they just kind of adjusted themselves to that culture that already established itself as a result of subversion? I would lean towards the second scenario, but I think.
It almost doesn't really matter. What matters from our standpoint is going to leftists and saying, you claim to be against capitalism, yet the social values that you put forward are the social values of the big capitalists. The big capitalists are fine with gay marriage, and they support transgenderism, and they support mass immigration and all the rest of it. They support political correctness. They support wokeness. So if they support all of those things, clearly all of those things are compatible with capitalism. Clearly all of those things are beneficial to capitalist power. Otherwise, why would they support them? And we can actually explain why they're beneficial to capitalist power, because what those things do is they destroy the fabric of the nation. They destroy national loyalty. They destroy patriotism. And that's why leftists attack them, because leftists decided after World War II that, well, probably earlier, but they particularly decided this after World War II, that nationalism was their main enemy. Nationalism, national socialism, fascism, that whole suite of ideas, that's their main enemy. And that was more important. Fighting that was more important to them than, you know, advocating for the working class. In fact, a lot of leftist theorists said, well, the white working class betrayed us because they supported national socialism and fascism. So fuck the white working class. We're going to replace them with a brown and black working class and a gay working class and so on that will support communism. So they made the decision that destroying nationalism was more important than destroying capitalism. And capitalists then looked at the world and said, you know what? The biggest threat to us actually isn't communism, it's nationalism. And you can see that in World War II, because in World War II, the liberal capitalist West allied with the Soviet Union to destroy National Socialist Germany. So clearly they made the decision then that they were more threatened by National Socialism than communism. Otherwise, they wouldn't have allied with one against the other. That's just a brute fact of history that communists and leftists cannot argue away. That's reality. Then they then set upon systematically funding and supporting the destruction of nationalism and anything approximating nationalism in every Western country under their control. So why would capitalists want to do this? Well, nationalism is the greatest threat to an international market system, because nationalists, when they come to power and they take over the government, they go and look at what's happening in international markets and they say, well, hey, wait a second, this capitalist over here is making a profit at the expense of my nation. He's taking jobs to other countries. He's importing goods from other countries, and he's doing all of these things that are good for him to make extra profits, but they're actually bad for the strength of my nation. And so I'm going to start creating all these laws that protect local industries, keep wealth and resources in my country to build up the national strength, make sure there's good jobs for my people. But international finance, they didn't want to do that, because at the end of the post-war globalization that we've had, they wanted to go and exploit the cheap slave labor in China and other foreign, you know, third world countries, and then import all that cheap crap into the West and sell it to us. And they took away all the manufacturing jobs. Like back in the 1960s or the 1970s, over 30% of Australia's economy was manufacturing. We used to make cars. We used to make computers. We used to make everything here. Now it's only 6% of the economy. We make nothing here. And that's one of the reasons why people are doing it tough, because there isn't good quality jobs for the working class anymore, because they sent all those jobs to foreign countries. And the people that would stop that are nationalists, which is why they attack the White Australia policy, which is why they attack nationalism, which is why they attack your identity, because they don't want white Australians, you know, supporting a political leader that's loyal to them before he's loyal to big business. All the biggest companies in this country, the top 20 companies in Australia, are majority foreign owned. It's all Wall Street, Jewish banking firms and shit that own all of our shit. Like, all of our shit has been sold to all these, like, foreign interests. Our country has been completely sold off. All the jobs have been shipped offshore. We had so much wealth in this country. We were one of the wealthiest countries per capita in the entire world. So much has been shipped overseas to the benefit of large corporate interests at your expense. And if you had leaders that were nationalists, like they used to be before World War II in Australia, who put white Australian people first, they wouldn't have let that happen. So that's why they had to destroy that ideology to facilitate this. That's what international finance wanted. And that's why the world that is run by international finance, these big capitalists, attack people like us and our ideas hard rather than the left. They fear them less than us because we are the true enemy. And the left is complicit. The left attacks us harder than it attacks them, even though they have the power and we don't. So their entire worldview is bullshit. They're complete frauds.
What you seem to be saying there is the left are LARPing as class communists. Like, they're not actually against the bourgeoisie or the rich. They're actually race communists, like race and race hate. Punishing white people is at the center of all of their politics.
Yes. Yes, they care more. And we see this in their revealed preference. They care more about attacking us than they care about attacking capitalist power. Why is the left, their number one focus is anti-fascism? Why isn't it anti-capitalism? Why aren't they going after the enemy in a serious way? Or that they're supposed to enemy? Because number one, that's hard, because you're going after the people that are actually powerful. That's what we do. And, you know, we get locked up in jail and we get dragged through courts and horrible things happen to us. You know, people get fired from their jobs. When you go after the real power goes after you.
No bank accounts, no monetization, no Patreon, no YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah, the only time the left do anything that really goes after the power, serious power, is when they go after Israel.
Then they feel some consequences, finally, for the first time in their lives.
The only time they feel any consequences, and that also proves the other aspect of what we say, which is that capitalism is Jewish. The capitalist elite, a lot of them are fucking Jews. And if you look at the history of capitalism was developed, you know, the entire logic and structure of capitalism was developed by basically Jewish practices subverting medieval European society. We talked about this on the show a few weeks ago. Werner Sombart's work, the book is called Jews and Modern Capitalism. And Werner Sombart wasn't just any old, you know, anti-Semite or something. Werner Sombart was the greatest theorist of the German historical school of historical economics in the late 19th and early 20th century. He was a genius. He was a genius. And as he was writing his work, basically trying to articulate the whole history of capitalism, how it came into existence and why, he realized that the Jews played such an important role that he had to write a completely separate book just on the Jews and their involvement in the development of capitalism. And in that book, he describes how in medieval Europe, merchants had a completely different ethos. So if you were a merchant in medieval Europe and you went out into the public square and you started praising your wares and talking about how great the stuff at your shop is and how low your prices are and all this kind of stuff, that was considered immoral. If you tried to get customers off the other shop owners, that was considered immoral. If you charged a different price than the other customers, the other merchants, if you tried to like sell your stuff extra cheap, that was considered immoral. Everything had a set price. You sell it at that price. You don't big up your goods. You are a Christian. The people who made it are Christians. Everyone should just trust that that the quality is there. That's that. There's no hoodwinking. There's no marketing. There's no manipulation that was permitted. It was just a fair, equitable system. And it was completely mediated through charitable, good faith Aryan society. Then the Jews come in, and the Jews will come in. Jews had international networks. They're an international clique, as Hitler described. They would be involved, particularly in early colonization. They were going after the gold mines and the silver mines and stuff over in South America. But, you know, they were very involved in these international trade networks. Also, all the trade networks that ran through the Middle East into Europe as well. And because they had an international ethnicity, every other ethnic group was in one location, the Jews had people everywhere. So the Jews could use the fact that they were one international group to build all these relationships with the other Jewish merchants all around the world and to facilitate international trade. And then as a result, they could then import goods and bring them into your community and sell them cheaper than the stuff made in your local community. And they didn't have laws against that kind of stuff back then or any kind of regulations back then because it was an honor system. And so they'd come in and they would sell stuff at half the price and they'd destroy local industries. They'd be haggling people on the street trying to sell stuff. They'd be advertising their goods. This is why the Jews took over the media, because the Jews were the first people to get into advertising. It was considered immoral to advertise for Aryans. But Jews didn't have any issue with advertising. And so they then got into that industry, and that, you know, the advertising industry is the backbone of the printing, print media. You know, print media makes a lot of money off the advertising on the papers in the newspaper. So as newspapers were invented, you know, in the early 18th century and widely distributed, Jews played a leading role in financing, you know, a lot of that, because Jewish merchants would advertise through those. And then that gave them a lot of control over media and therefore public perception. But, you know, Jews innovated in these industries, and so they were able to undercut the opposition. That's why Jews kept getting kicked out of all these different cities and countries all across Europe all the time, because they would come in with their investment practices and destroy the livelihoods of local industries and local merchants, completely upset, you know, the whole apple cart of the local community. And eventually there would be enough public resentment that they'd run them out of the city and demand that they'd be kicked out of the city. And then they'd go to the next city and they'd do the same thing and so on. And the process kept repeating. But eventually, they were able to become normalized in Europe because they made so many deals with elite political actors, and basically traders that got in bed with these Jewish merchants and were making a quick buck. And I'm not even talking about usurious lending as well, which is a whole other aspect of this. Eventually Jewish mercantile behavior became normalized, and now it's considered normal to have advertising. Now it's considered normal to try and undercut and compete with other firms and try and sell things cheaper and import goods from all over the world, and instead of like buying things from like local producers. And, you know, we've got this completely globalized, you know, marketized, corporatized, consumerized society now. This all came from originally the impact of the Jewish mentality and, the Jewish culture on Aryan, you know, Middle Ages Europe. Without that, maybe we wouldn't live in this fucking shitscape. So Capitalism is fundamentally and inherently Jewish in a certain way, you could argue, according to Sombart's theories, which I think are really compelling, the history that he describes in that book. But then secondarily, we can see that Jews are very, up to this day, like I've talked about on the show before, how look at the property development industry, which is a massive supporter of mass immigration, because more immigrants means more demand for property so they can build more high-rise, fucking Zog slave, high-rise apartments and sell them for, $800,000 a pop, like in some overcrowded part of like inner city Sydney or Melbourne or something. And a bunch of Asians and Pajits will buy them or want to rent them or whatever. And, that's a great business model for them. It doesn't do anything for our country. It just clutters our cities, makes traffic worse, depresses wages with cheap labor and so on, but drives up the price of rent and all this kind of stuff. But for them, it's great. They're making millions. They're making billions. And the biggest property developer in Australia is Harry Triguboff, the Jew. And the Jews have always been instrumental in high-rise development in this country, because before World War II, we didn't allow high-rise development in Australia, because our culture said if we have all these high-rise apartments in the cities, what this is going to encourage people to do is to move in there, move out of their parents' home when they're in their 20s, move into one of these apartments in the city, and they're not going to have children, they're not going to get married, they're going to start having frivolous sex, they're going to start developing this kind of cosmopolitan left-wing culture. They're going to become, basically soy jack, Reddit libtard types. We don't want that. That's happened in Europe and it's created all these revolutionary communist movements and it's been a mess in Europe. We don't want that. What's in Australia. The Australian dream is going to be, everyone is going to have their own, quarter acre block and have their own home that you can fit a family in, and they're going to get married young. They're going to have children and they're going to have a dignified existence, and you can go and work at the factory before we send all the jobs overseas. And you can earn enough to be able to support a wife and three kids and so on. And that's how we're going to build our society. It's going to be healthy. The tallest building in town is going to be the church. Nothing's going to be bigger than the church. No high-rise development. Everyone's going to have a backyard. Everyone's going to be out, kids playing outside, healthy, blah, blah, blah. That was the great Australian dream. And the Jews came in after World War II and started building high-rise developments. The first high-rise developments were in the Jew areas of Sydney and Melbourne, in Bondi, in St. Kilda. The places that still to this day are where the Jews live. That's where the first high-rise developments were, and they got money from their international Jewish finance buddies to finance them, because they have the international networks that give them, low-interest loans to then build their high-rise developments. And this is where the money for a lot of these, wealthy Jewish families that are now controlling our government came from, is from setting up shop, basically, subverting our society, building these high-rise developments, developing these giant corporations that now control our government, and of forcing immigrants down our throat. And, these have been, a lot of the money that's been behind multiculturalism and so on has come from these developments, and they've completely subverted Australian society. Now we do have these cosmopolitan communist, leftists that are like, that don't have any children and so on, and live in the inner cities and perpetuate this left-wing ideology, just like it was predicted. And so you can see like the same, Jewish infection of our society, kind of like what I described in medieval Europe, has happened here to create this current problem. But a lot of people don't understand this or know about this, but this is just history. This is just how it works. So, when we're talking about the problems with capitalism, it's not just an abstract idea. We're talking about fucking Jews. So anyway, I went on a bit of a tangent there, but I thought it was important.
Yeah, you sometimes do that. I tend to try to just let you go. But it was all very good stuff. That's the thing. It's a lot to unpack for the average person, but because people can go back and they can rewatch it, they can replay these little segments, I think it's all really good stuff. I've got a jet. I've got some responsibilities to see too, but it's been a great stream so far. You're going to stay with it, Joel, I suppose.
No, we'll end it there. That's
okay. We can do some super chats then. I can stick around for that, I suppose.
All right, there's not that many. Clever Name said, never get to catch you live. The mustache needs a badge and some brutality to go with it. Solid 7 out of 10. Congrats on the little one. That's obviously directed towards Tom. And I agree that Tom kind of has like a cop physiognomy. Tom does kind of look like a cop, in a way. Maybe in a healthy society, you would be a cop.
Whoa, are you talking about Tom Sewell?
Yeah, don't you think he kind of looks like a cop?
maybe with a mustache a little bit, but I always thought I could be a good cop if, like, I was living in a society where that was feasible. Obviously, it's not feasible now.
Like, one of those cool, but, like, 70s cops that wear, like, the aviators and, like...
Well, you used fashion, to have to, like, you used to have to be a guy like me to be a cop. You had to be as big and as tall as me. They were, like, the basic physical standards to be a police officer, because you had to command respect in the community. You had to be intimidating to a certain degree, but also respectable. So, like, my physiognomy was the one they used to go for, but now there's all these equality, you know, you can't discriminate, that kind of stuff. So I wouldn't last as a police officer, because I wouldn't be able to toe the line. I wouldn't be swearing allegiance to feminism and the LGBT community, and so I'd quickly be shunned by the rest of the force. But, upon a time, I think I could have been a good cop.
No, in a healthy society, like the NSN would be the cops, you know, and we'd keep the streets safe. You know, that story the other day of that fat nigger that raped that poor young girl, and they had the CCTV. I posted it. Notice the News posted it as well, this fat, disgusting nigger. And I think I said in the replies to when the mainstream news posted the video looking for the suspect, I was like, why the fuck do we have Negroes in Australia? Like, why the fuck are they here? Like, this isn't, like, you just stop back, just stop and think, like, take a step back.
They're a bio
weapon.
Just
think about how fucking ridiculous that is. Why the fuck are they here? Why do we build planes and boats and transport savage fucking rapist beasts halfway across the fucking world into our country? You know, give them, like, Centrelink bucks and, like, you know, feed them, you know, full of KFC hormones and just let them roam the streets, like, with no supervision, like, not even putting them in a cage or anything. They can just roam the streets. It's like, what next? Like, chimpanzees, fucking lions? What else are we going to, what other wildlife are we going to bring from Africa? I mean, it's fucking insane.
Yeah, no comment. Where do you want to start with the super chats? We've got a few from Rumble. We've got the Shogun. Sends $20. Thanks very much. Violence prevails when democracy fails, said Molotov Solution. If you enjoy metal and are red-pilled, they are a must-listen. Oh, it must be a band, Molotov Solution. All right, Molotov Solution. It sounds interesting.
Yeah, I'll give them a
I won't talk about that. Anyway, next is Ukrainian Groypa sends through $10. You went through that one already. Narn Nation.
Yeah, Narn Nation. Yeah.
And fellow comrade, regular supporter of the show, sends through $10. Thanks, mate. He says, I wonder if the face mask ban will cover people wearing Groucho Marx glasses as a disguise. Maybe. But they said one of the reasons given for banning the face masks was it was protecting people from capsicum spray, which I don't think face masks do very well.
No, they don't work.
You need to have like a full gas mask with like airtight goggles to protect your eyes from that stuff.
And
even if it gets on your skin, it burns your skin too. Like, so it's not really it incapacitates you. I've been hit by mace once at a fair distance too. And it doesn't matter who you are. That stuff incapacitates you for 10 minutes.
If you have good goggles, you can deal with it. Like, it's kind of real spicy and that's not great, but excuse me. Thinking of capsicum spray just like fucked me up then. But if you have good goggles that keep it out of your eyes, it's tolerable. Like, it's shit, but it's tolerable. It's like eating like fuckloads of chilies or something. Like, if it gets in your, you know, nose or whatever, unless you get like a fucking like straight in your mouth or something, then obviously.
Do you like spicy food, Joel? Do you like spicy food? Is that your thing?
Yeah, to an extent, but I'm not like crazy about it. You know what I mean?
I love the stuff. I mean, yeah, I don't look like the sort of guy who would like spicy food, but I can't get enough of it. Makes me salivate just thinking about spicy food.
I'm not a huge fan of like the Indian. Maybe it's just I'm so racist that I can't bring myself to enjoy Indian food. But
I don't eat Indian. Indian curries are just created to disguise the fact that the meat is off and really poor quality. That's why Indians curried their food. They didn't have refrigeration for a long time. So Indian cuisine is just rotten, poor quality food mixed in slop to disguise how bad it actually is. Like, I don't know why people go to Indian restaurants. The fact that Indian restaurants even exist is ridiculous. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, first of all, the premise, an Indian is going to cook you dinner. Doesn't matter what they're making, that's fucked. You know, Mexican food, I don't mind the burrito, but from what I understand, like, the burrito, that as we understand it, is actually an American invention. That's white people improving Mexican cuisine and, like, upgrading it from, like, schlop to something, like, actually edible. So it's not really a Mexican thing. It's like fake Mexican. Tex-Mex. I think it's Texan. So.
Aussie Autist 88 sends through $5. Thanks, mate. He says, happy midsummer. It's 2 days' time. Oh, someone knows. I won't divulge anything about that. There's nothing crazy going on. It's just like a little private Christmas party. But yeah, you guys might see some photos of that after the fact. We'll see.
Yeah, no, it's midsummer's good to celebrate. We don't celebrate it properly in Australia because, unlike the Europeans, it's like so close to Christmas. Where the Europeans is like the opposite side of the year. So
isn't midsummer that movie? Is that the name of the movie?
I'm sure there's a movie called Midsummer. I can't think of.
I was thinking of the
dress. Shakespeare's The Midsummer's Night's Dream. That's like a Shakespearean play.
No, okay. Well, I was thinking of our Christmas party in 2 days' time, which has a midsummer dress theme. I might as well just give it away now. I thought the movie that
dude,
we were...
OPSEC. Well, we can't be divulging our private...
it's just a dress code. Who cares? Like, whatever. I hope we get some photos, though, because it's going to look
OPSEC.
Cool.
I'm calling OPSEC on it. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm just excited about it. I've already bought my getup and I'm excited.
Why don't we like go through our criminal records again on stream and go through all the horrible things?
Well, okay. Where do I begin?
and then on Odyssey, I got a super chat from Clever Name. Oh no, I already read that one. On Entropy, I got a super chat from The Gump. He said, "Why people need to start to favor our own kind in business. That's the only way to generate and keep resources in our group interests. Big contracts, fundings, positions, they all have diversity requirements to weaken us." Well, I agree with that. Insofar as you can do business with whites and work with whites and so on, you always should. You absolutely should. And I think that's quite clear and obvious, a good thing to do. Personally, I hate working with non-whites. And your goal should be to work with them as little as possible, and if possible, not at all. Do business with them not at all if you can. But I understand that a lot of industries, it's unavoidable, so it is what it is for some people, but that should be your objective. But also, yeah, like if you can source your produce from like local farmers, if you can get milk from local farmers, eggs from local farmers, etc., meat is like, not only is it going to be high quality and better for you, better for your health. But also that's so much better than going down to like, you know, the Zog options of Woolies or Coles and like dumping your money into some foreign Jew owned, you know, megacorp that, you know, is importing half the shit from overseas and injecting the other half of the shit with fucked up hormones that are bad for your health and screwing over Australian farmers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, definitely always try and do your business locally and within the race. But I think that's more or less all the super chats. So thanks for watching the show this evening. It's been a good chill stream. Unfortunately, Tom, suffered Zog DDoS attacks and they took him out. They took out our boy. So RIP to the big man. But I think next week we'll figure out whatever was wrong there. We'll fix that up. Herson should have his setup sorted as well. He was supposed to be on tonight, but then some things came up. So we're going to have, Herson and Tom on more again in the future, like, you know, like it used to be. Well, Herson's been on a few times, but Tom used to be on more regularly. I do like doing the show when it's like three or four of us a bit more, because it's kind of like often we cook up like a more intense conversation sometimes. What do you think?
I think it was pretty intense. Oh, well, it wasn't as intense as some of our conversations, but, you know, we're building on it.
And some of the best shows when we go off on tangents for like an hour that are like some of the best content.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. Well, people watch the show in the background a lot of the time. The benefit of long streams is you can put them on while you're doing other stuff. So people sometimes only catch glimpses of what you're talking about. Then they go back to it later if they're really interested. And that's the point of these shows. It's to kind of replace your standard television program, you know, so you're not being brainwashed by bad propaganda. You're getting the good kind of propaganda from us. Because whatever you're going to watch, it's propaganda to some degree. Whatever you expose yourself to in the realm of entertainment, information, it's always propaganda to some degree. So choose the right propaganda. And you'll know it's the right propaganda if you start, you know, if your life starts improving, I think. Like, one way to gauge the quality of the content you're exposing yourself to is how your health shifts or develops or declines over time. Like, you got to, if you start watching a new type of, political, ideological content, you get into that kind of thing, you're into it for a few years, compare the way you look and feel, compare your physical health and your mental health to where you were 3 years prior before you were into that stuff. If it's worse, it's probably shit for you. If it's better, it's good for you. And I seem to be getting healthier, so nationalism is good for you guys. Take my word for it. I don't know if I'm like just making – I don't know if I'm making no sense there. I'm getting to the point where I'm getting really drowsy, but it's been a good show, guys. Thanks for joining us.
I just want to say, just before you go, that Ben Dawkins, who just quit the One Nation Party in WA, he just tweeted, I've been following some of the fallout from Parminder's social media, but my press release says what I'm saying on my resignation from Pauline Hanson's One Nation. I'll post it tomorrow. So the fact that he mentioned it means it's probably something to do with that. We'll see tomorrow what comes out. But, yeah, keep the pressure. The Parminder gate has only just begun. Keep the pressure up on One Nation. If you're not on Twitter, make a Twitter account. I've said this the whole time on this show. There's a way to do online activism. You can make an impact online because everyone who's specced into politics, works in politics, is in political media, they're all on Twitter. If you can push narratives and direct conversations on Twitter, you can actually create an effect in like actual politics if you do it effectively and aggressively with a big enough group. So get on there, help support the initiatives, and should be a Merry Christmas to everyone. By the way, I know we're still, you know, a few days out, but we probably won't do another show until after Christmas. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. Probably not. It's a lot of stuff with the community, with family, and stuff I got to do personally. And that's what you should be doing this time of year. Hopefully, people have got time off work and you can spend it with your close friends, with your family in particular, and tis the season. Enjoy yourselves. We love you all. We'll see you all in the next episode. And white fucking power.
See you guys.